When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
What's happening, everybody, here on the Triple Threat Podcast? It is your boy DJ Shockley here. We appreciate y'all joining us here. My man Scotty D will bless the mic here shortly, but we appreciate you joining us here every week on the Triple Threat Podcast. I get everybody who hit me up and say, oh man, I like that guest. This dude sounded crazy. Oh, I like the way that dude was talking about this. So we appreciate the love, man. We appreciate everybody who actually is tuning in and subscribing and then passing the word along. So the more you can pass it on, we appreciate that even more. And with further ado, I know everybody's looking forward to talking to or hear from my man, Scotty D. Scotty D, tell the people what's happening.
What's happening? All kinds of stuff is happening.
No, not happening. You got to say happening. What's happening?
What's happening?
There you go.
I got you. I got you.
Oh, Scotty D gave some slang with him. I'm talking about happening.
All right, I'm there.
Hey, tonight when your wife come in, be like, hey, baby, what's happening? And she's going to be like, oh, where you get that from? Just tell her, hey, baby, don't worry about that. You know what
I'm saying? She'll know. She knows who I hang out once a week with.
Yeah, it's what's happening, man. All right, man. But, man, we got a lot to talk about, man. Obviously, a lot of big news, as usual, in the NFL world and NBA. We got All-Star Weekend coming up. We got a couple of people signing with a couple of different new teams. We also got some later stuff happening with Tiger, and then also what's going on in the world of the NBA. Obviously talking about some things happening with the Hawks this week, but also a big stuff happening in All-Star Weekend and how it's benefiting some of the HBCUs with All-Star Weekend coming to Atlanta, Georgia this weekend. All right, let's start with the biggest news. I think the biggest news of the week, obviously, is J.J. Watt is signing with the Arizona Cardinals on a 2-year. It was at first looked at it's going to be $31 million. Now it looks like it's going to be around $28 million, but he has a chance to get that other $3 million. But he got $12 million assigned, going to base value of 14.5 here in 2021. And to get to $31 million, Scotty D, this is what he got to do. Okay. He's got to have 10 or more sacks in 21 and 22. Now, the only thing about that is he hasn't had a double-digit sack consecutive season since 2014 and 2015. So it's been a little while since old JJ has had double-digit sack team years. But the biggest news was obviously other teams were coming in and they were in the range around by $12 million a year. So he's going to make around $14 million this year from the Arizona Cardinals. No one offered him that $15-16 million, which was around what he was going to make this year in Houston. But I think a good deal for J.J. Watt and the Cardinals. They put him on the other side of Chandler Jones, who is a wrecking crew in his own right. They got a young quarterback. So I actually like the fact that JJ's going to that division where it's already going to be tough. But maybe this is even more instance why Russell Wilson may want to get out of Seattle because they ain't going to be able to block him anyway. But initial thoughts, man, when you saw JJ was going to Bird Gang.
Well, I like JJ Watt added to any defensive line pretty much. But yeah. I tell you what I found the most interesting looking at the odds in Vegas. They still have the longest odds in that division to win the Super Bowl. It didn't really move the meter from a gambling standpoint. I found that kind of interesting, but man, I'm happy for him. Who doesn't like him? But I think you're right on when you talk about when you brought up the double digit sack totals.
Yeah.
The dude gets hurt a lot, man.
Yeah,
and part of it's just
last few years.
When you're that size, I think in general, and you're putting your body through what he puts his body through. Yeah. It's hard to stay healthy, especially the older you get. And he's
so,
not.
So that's issues you have, huh? I can tell. I mean, you and JJ are like kind of similar stature. Mm. So
I'm feeling it, man.
Yeah, it makes sense. Similar now, man. Stature. I'm starting to understand it now. We got our own JJ White here on the shelf, for sure. You know what I mean? But I mean, you're talking about in a division, obviously with Seattle, with the Rams. I mean, it's already tough enough in that division. And I can see why it wouldn't change the meter. I mean, he's one pass rusher. But yeah. I think about it from this play, from a quarterback's perspective, from an offensive-minded guy, I would say this is huge because what if you put him and Jones on the same side? Usually as an offense, you have one dominant pass rusher. And as an offensive coordinator, you say, okay, I can slide the line one way to that pass rusher. I can bring a receiver in to chip him. I can chip him with a running back. I can cut him with a receiver. I can do all these things.
Yeah.
To kind of take him away. But now, let's say it's third and long, or it's third and seven or eight, and you got Chandler Jones and you got J.J. Watt, and you put them on the same side. What you going to do then? Or you put them on opposite sides. Whose side you going to slide to? It's going to be a problem for a lot of teams. They got to figure out how to do it. So if he can stay healthy now, he is a game changer, no doubt.
If you're a DC, do you prefer to have them on one side or on opposite sides, or do you like the flexibility of moving them?
The flexibility, because as an offensive guy, I want to know where you're going to be at. If I don't know where you're going to be at on second down, I don't know where you're going to be at on third down. I don't know if it's third and long and you're going to line up over the guard, and sometimes you line up over the tackle, or you can be lined up in a one technique on the inside, and it's a matchup problem. Over the center. Like, there's a lot of things they could do with these different pass rushers. So it's going to be interesting. And they also got Isaiah Simmons, man. He can be coming into his second year. Vance Joseph, the defensive coordinator, is an aggressive play caller in his own right. So they're going to draw up some stuff now that's going to make a lot of people really, really kind of question this one, see if it actually works out pretty good for him. So, hey, man, congrats to J.J. Watt. Found him a new home in Arizona. I saw a tweet that said that I saw a tweet that said he was talking about with Chandler Jones. Chandler Jones was trying to recruit him, and he was, you know, saying, hey, you come here, I'll cook you whatever you want. And when he finally came, he sent him a message and said, what you want to eat? So I thought that's pretty cool. But you know what I also thought was funny? Scotty, I don't know if you heard it. Did you hear how he went about trying to hide where he was going to go?
Staying quiet the whole time. And then at the very end, when I decided that Arizona was the place, we realized how quiet it had truly been on that front. And I said, I think I'm going to announce this one on my own. Take control of your own narrative as a player. And so I had actually a few – this is kind of funny. It's kind of stupid too, but whatever. A few days earlier, we had known like kind of the final – you know, four or five teams, we had an idea of who the final four or five teams were. So I had shirts for each team ordered just in case, you know, the situation arose. But we were trying to keep this so quiet that I didn't trust whoever at the packaging facility would not see my name on the package and put two and two together. And so I had my brother's high school friend use his credit card and his address, and he shipped the shirts to his house. And then he brought him over to my house so that we can make this all happen. So, shout out to Doug and Joe for making this happen. I appreciate you guys. They're the true brains behind the shirt that I wore for the workout.
Pretty cool. He was able to break his own story and end it with the quote, "Hey, source me." So
yeah,
not enough
of that nowadays, is there?
Nah, man, we got too many people breaking stories. Everybody want to be the hero, so it's all good, man. The Russell Wilson saga still continues, man. Russell Wilson hasn't asked for a trade, but there's still a little bit of angst between him and the organization right now. And if I'm Pete Carroll, I don't know about you, Scotty. I find a way to make this work. Do you think it's solvable where it is now?
Well, I think it is. And I think more importantly, if I'm Paul, who owns the Seahawks, if I'm the owner of the Seahawks, Pete Carroll better get together with Russell or Pete Carroll's gone. I'm just going to be honest. I mean, we see it all the time, and we saw it in another sport locally here in Atlanta this week. When a player, your franchise player wants something, that usually is going to, is going to trump what the coach is dealing with. I just wonder, is this really as big of a story as people are making it out to be? Because we really don't know what discussions have been happening. Yeah. All we know is, Russell made a couple comments. I don't think they were, I need to get out of here. They were, I would like to have some input on some things moving forward. And I think it's a fair thing to do considering what he's done for the team so far. Although again, I'll say the same thing I did while I was Deshaun. I'm not at the core belief that ownership owes anything to employees to give them what they want all the time. But,
I'm on the other end of that because at the end of the day, that organization expects you to play to a standard when they give you the money.
Yeah. That's
so
fair.
Why is it not the other way around when, yes, I play to that standard.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't I have say now? Like,
right.
You need me just as much as I possibly need you in this situation. Like an organization needs players and players need an organization who can run it the right way. So I think as much as the owners get all this power and they get all this value to say and do what they want, I believe now the players are taking it into their own rights to say, listen, if you don't have us, if you don't have me a part of this organization, we go in a totally different direction. So
I look at
it like at the end of the day, if you don't play well, guess what they do? They want to cut you. They want to get rid of you. They want to take your money. But when you do play well, they want to restructure it. They want to make it work for them. Man, dudes ain't going for that no more, man.
Well, I don't have a problem with it. I just, at the core, the boss is the boss. And that's I think in the end, they don't owe it to them. Are they smarter to give him this? Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I just wonder if the media has blown this really out of proportion.
Yeah. I think anything that when you have a franchise quarterback like a Russell Wilson, like a Deshaun Watson, it's hard not to overblow the situation because these guys are a huge part of the National Football League. They're a huge part of the organization. Yeah. So it's worth talking about. So I think until something happens, everybody will continue to talk about it. We'll talk about it. So, hey, it is what it is, and we'll keep it rolling. We forgot to mention, man, we got a special guest coming up here in just a little bit. We want to keep you guys kind of intrigued about it a little bit. Scotty D got us a special guest today, so we'll see. Hopefully he comes through and drops some gems on us. So stay tuned. About 10 minutes or so, we'll get that special guest on the line. Vincent Jackson, we know a lot of them have seen, passed away a few days ago. Investigation still underway. We know he's living at a hotel since January, and you just wonder what his state of mind was. His family has sent his brain off to be diagnosed and looked at for CTE and all those kind of things. So we should get more information on that. Just sad news to hear of a guy that young passing away, and absolutely prayers go out to his family. I know he has a family and kids and all that kind of stuff. So well, sad to hear that, man. It was tough to see. I watched Vincent Jackson for a long time play, man. It was just sad to hear about that news when it came about.
Well, he was a great player, and what I've found interesting is reading about, feedback from people that he was around. Mike Evans credits him with all of his success. Point blank, it said Mike Evans didn't want to work hard when he came into the league. And when Vincent Jackson was in Tampa, he got that turned around, and now he's an all-pro type, wide receiver. And there are all kinds of stories like that. And he's great charitable stuff. He went back to college to get his degree in 2016. He seemed to be pretty successful in business. It had some real estate, some restaurants, written a couple children's books. And like I said, a lot of charitable stuff. So he's a loss. And I hope something good can come from this with this, looking into the CTE thing.
No doubt. No doubt. Big prayers up to him and his family, man. Sad news for sure. But can't wait to hear and see what happened. Hopefully it wasn't something that everybody thinks it was with CTE, but mostly we can learn from it. All right, moving on in the draft. Draft is steadily starting to approach. We are into the month of March. In the month of March, as we know, the draft is next month, and a lot of young individuals will have their dreams come true. Mel Kiper, obviously, they come up with all these mock drafts. There's a 4.0, 5.0. By the time we get to the draft, we're going to be on 10.0 by then with him and Todd McShay. But Mel Kiper saw this was interesting. He had the Falcons trading up to number two to get our guy Wilson. Zach Wilson from BYU, to be correct. And I also saw another instance where there were a couple guys talking about at four, what if the Falcons took Kyle Pitts, the tight end from Florida? With all the needs you have, and it comes about needs and wants and all that kind of stuff, but I still think, okay, Jags at one, you got Trevor. Number two, I think that's probably the most critical spot in the draft right now, the Jets. Mm-hmm. And I bring up the Jets because I saw Joe Douglas, the GM from the Jets, says his stance on Darnold has not changed. He's very smart, tough, no doubt will achieve his outstanding potential, and he feels no deadline about decision on the quarterback position, but is fielding calls on trading Darnold. So I think everybody is on pins and needles on what the Jets should do. What do you think the Jets should do with number two? Forget the Falcons at four. What about at number two? What happens there in the Scotty D mock draft?
Well, first of all, that's saying absolutely nothing as the GM.
Exactly. It said nothing at all.
It's saying nothing.
It didn't give you nothing at all.
No. I just wonder what Mel, you know, and I take what these guys say with a grain of salt because they're like weathermen. How often do they have to be right, right?
They're going to change every time. And like, my mock draft 7.0 was right.
Yeah, if you take these picks from mock draft 3.0 and these right. draft, yeah. So I don't know. I think I hate the idea of the Falcons moving up two spots and losing capital.
I ain't a fan of that either.
I think in the end, it's going to come down with are the Jets going to throw away the keys on Sam Darnold? You know, are they ready to move on? And I don't really have an instinct on it. I think they might be. They said all those great things about him, but he also sees ghosts, right? And that's, we talked to Moose last week, and he was talking about stuff like that, where if your head's not right, you don't know if you can rebound from that.
And I'll say this, man, when you get a new staff come in, you have to prove yourself every year. My first 3 years in the league, I had a new head coach my first 3 years. So that's a new head coach. That's new offensive coordinator. That's guys that didn't know me. That was the two after Jim Moore. They didn't draft me, so they didn't know me. But I still worked my tail off, and I obviously did something where they wanted to keep me around. And I think that's what's happening now is do Robert Saleh and that staff feel that they can be successful with Sam Darnold? And I'm not sure they are. I'm not sure they're satisfied with who he is. And I think with how talent-rich the front part of this draft is with the quarterbacks, they go in the direction of, we're a brand-new staff. We're going to start our identity this particular way. Mm-hmm. And if their identity is this particular way of going with somebody else, then I think that's what they're going to do. I think they're going to pull the trigger on the quarterback, and they're going to try to find a way to get more capital by trading Sam Darnold as well. So if they're able to get something for him, which they will, because I'm sure there are other teams who would love to have a Sam Darnold on the team, they can get more picks. They can, you know, get more capital with it or whatever it may be, and we'll see what happens. But for me, I think the Jets pulled the trigger on the quarterback. And right now I saw where somebody had Justin Fields at number two. Zach Wilson, that's going to be the controversy going back and forth, those two guys.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, I think there's going to be so much intrigue with Zach Wilson. I think people have seen enough of Justin Fields to know exactly who he is and what they want. If they feel comfortable with him, they're going to pull the trigger. But all the noise right now is about Zach Wilson early. So I wouldn't be surprised if he is the second quarterback taken in this 2021 year draft.
Well, I hope for both of their benefits and for the Falcons' benefit in particular that both of these guys turn out to be great quarterbacks, because one of them is going to end up in Atlanta, I think. So,
Ooh. I'm not so
no
on that same plane that the Falcons even draft a quarterback at four. I think they wait till second, third round to probably get a quarterback, because obviously they don't need one. Ben Kurt is gone. They just released him. Shabby has retired.
Mm-hmm.
Matt's really the only guy you got. But knowing what you know about Matt and age, but also with the money that's involved, he has at least next year for sure. He has 2021 for sure.
Right.
2022, there's a chance for other things to happen. So I think you do draft a quarterback, but I'm not sure if they want to draft the guy at four, because the guy at four says you're day one starter.
Hmm.
That means you're starting year one. I mean, you draft the guy at four. Now, the Packers went and got Jordan Love, and that was like 20-something. 20-something is still considered, hey, he can be our franchise guy, but he's not four.
All right.
Four is like change the organization type of player. So I don't think they draft a quarterback at four for me. I mean, that's just my opinion. I could be totally wrong. I could be totally off on it. But
so do you think Kyle Pitts is the move?
No, no, no. I don't think Kyle Pitts is the move either. But I know he's intriguing to have him and Hayden Hurst together. And he can be another receiver for you. But this is also with the mindset of how long you got with Julio. So if Julio's not there, you need another playmaker, another guy who can stretch the field for you. And I'm not so sure that, you know, Julio's on this team in 2 years either. So we'll see what happens here in the coming future, man. Obviously, I think this is going to be one of the more interesting drafts of a long time.
Yeah.
And we'll see how it all fares out. And we'll see in 5-10 years who's turned out to be the smarter team. Just like a few years ago when everybody passed on Mahomes and they passed on Deshaun, and Trubisky was the one that everybody was like, he's going to be the guy. And, hey, here we are 4 or 5 years later, and we're saying, hey, the Bears might have messed up. So
yeah, I don't think anybody's saying might have. I think it's a pretty sure thing.
So we'll see in 4 or 5 years if the Jets did the right thing at two, because that's where it's going to start, man. That's where it's going to start. All right, man. In other news, Alvin Kamara, man, when we talk about dudes living their life, dudes out there having rich folk stuff going on, he's out there on the slopes. Scotty D, I know you're on the slopes sometimes skiing and snowboarding and all that kind of stuff. Alvin Kamara took his talents to Montana. And let's check out what Alvin Kamara looked like on the slopes.
Dude is flying.
All right, DJ, here's my question. How many sets of platinum teeth do you think they see on the Montana ski slopes?
Zero. Zero. And for people who aren't able to see it, you're listening, he went for about a minute straight going down his ski slope and looking good doing it. Actually, there was a couple times like he was going, and I was like, bro, it's trees right there. It's
That's
trees
fast.
Right there. And he turned and how about the dude on the camera, though? How smooth was he? He wasn't even shaking. He had to be a pro taking a video.
Yeah, I think that's probably
pretty cool,
his
man. After about a minute, he finally ended up biting a little snow. But that's living, man. That's some kind of stuff that, you know, you think about doing, like a bucket list type of thing. And he crushed it, though, man. But
yeah.
I don't know how happy the Saints organization is, because, you know, hey, I've heard of bad things happening while you're on that ski slope.
Yeah.
He did a good job, man. I ain't gonna lie.
Man, that dude is so cool, man. I he just says what's on his mind. Now, sometimes it can be a little graphic, but he just says what's on his mind. He's an Atlanta boy.
Yeah.
And you know, I think he just walks around town in New Orleans like he's just a regular dude. I mean,
yeah.
he just seems like a cool dude to me.
Yeah, he's just one of those dudes, man. You know, people like to be around. He's, you know, like fun, happy, always like he's smiling. You see the flakes in the mouth going crazy, shining bright. Like, so, man, shout out to Alvin Kamara, man, doing his thing, you know, living life, having a good time in the offseason. Getting outside that box, I'm sure it is, or going on the skis, because that definitely would be outside my box, man. But shout out Alvin Kamara and all that, man. Moving on, golf, man. Obviously, Tiger Woods had the big car crash last week. We talked about it kind of in depth. And now the sheriff has gotten a warrant for the black box that was in that 2021 Genesis. And Scotty D, you saw a article from the New York Post. Talk about what you saw in that article about possibly what could have happened when Tiger was driving.
Yeah, they talked to a forensic accident investigator or something like that. And he said his opinion is it looks like he may have fallen asleep because the road is curving. And right. then he just kind of stays straight and crosses the other lanes of traffic. So
I can actually see that because it was early in the morning.
Yeah. He had a busy week, man. He didn't play, but he had a busy week hosting that golf tournament. So, and he was shooting the day before. So,
and then I remember the other details of there was no brakes or skid marks.
Right.
You know, no trying to turn or anything. So falling asleep could absolutely be
You know,
what they're talking about. And I know I saw a couple of things about, well, I think Tiger was, they were talking about in the midst of it and saying that black box could tell him, you know, how fast he was going, you know, was there any traction, you know, all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
more news starting to come out. Tiger since then has been moved to Cedar Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles and is recovering. So
yeah, everything seems to be going good.
Everybody's looking forward to seeing a glimpse of Tiger. How cool was it this past week? Past weekend on Sunday, all the golfers, tons of golfers, Corn Ferry Tour on the regular tour, wearing the patented red and black on Sunday. So still sending our prayers to Tiger, hopefully for a speedy return. All right, like we mentioned, got a guest coming up here in about 5 minutes. And before we get to that guest, Hawks fire Lord Lloyd Pierce this past week. Interesting enough, they allowed him to have practice. They allowed him to do the media responsibilities, and then after that, Travis Slink ends up telling Lloyd Pierce, "We do not need your services," and Nate McMillan takes over. Your initial thoughts on first firing Lloyd Pierce? I know the Hawks haven't looked good. You know, they've lost a bunch of games, especially in the fourth quarter. But you think it was the right decision to let Lloyd Pierce go?
You know, the dynamic that the coach has on a sports team winning is really hard to define, and it's hard to pin down how much of the responsibility is his.
Right.
Now, just like we talked about earlier with Russell Wilson, when your players that are going to be faces of the franchise are having issues, the coach is going to go first.
Right.
But I'll tell you what I've seen, what I have seen this year is horrible performance both defensively and shooting in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I've seen just threes being launched, and it seems to be their coldest time of the game for almost the whole team.
I saw a stat where it said where if Trae Young scores less than 24 points, then they lose the game. If he scores more than 24 points, most of the time they win the ball game. And if he has a certain amount of attempts in the fourth quarter, they win as well. So I think it's on Trae Young, man. He got to find a way to get this team going. I know he's just a point guard and all that, but I think a lot falls on Trae Young, man.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you wanted to see a good turnaround with immediate results, it was last night. They outscored the Heat 31-14 in the fourth quarter.
Nice.
All starters were in double digits. Trae only had 18, so he bucked that trend you were just talking about.
Nice.
But, you know, they had a ton of turnovers, and they still ended up winning by 14 points somehow. But
who was the lead scorer there? I mean, who was the guy?
It was Trae. 18? Okay. No, it was Trae with 18, and then Collins had 17. Herter had 16.
Okay.
Capella and Snell, 10 and 11. So, I mean, it was a well-rounded effort. And if you had told me, based on what I've watched this team the last couple of years, you see them lose games 130-120, right?
Yeah.
I would have you told me that they only scored 94 points. If there was a snowball's chance of, and you know where, of winning, I would have said, no way this team can win with only 94 points. So it's interesting. I like Nate McMillan. It was interesting that he was, you know, he was at odds with taking this job because Lloyd Pierce brings him in, you know, but they all know it's the business. It is what it is. So they looked great last night. I'm not saying it's all Nate McMillan, but, you know, it was balanced scoring and good basketball and closing.
They're going to need it. They're going to have like 38 games after the All-Star break to turn this around. And obviously the Hawks feel like they are playoff contenders. So I think this is why they're making this move here.
Let me also say their schedule has been front loaded. Okay. They've played the Lakers. They've played the Jazz. They've played the Nets a couple times. I think they played the Sixers a couple times. Mm-hmm. They've played tough teams. You know, I think their schedule should be easier moving forward. So it's not something you can just look at the record and make a determination on.
All right. Well, we'll see what the home team can do as they get started. Obviously, everybody still believes that the Lakers are the front runners headed into this offseason. I mean, going into, you know, the playoffs and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see what happens. Keep on the same lines of that. Last thing, the NBA All-Star is this weekend coming up. Obviously, it's Team LeBron versus Team KD. The starters for Team LeBron goes as is. Steph Curry, Luka, Nikola Jokic, and Kawhi Leonard. And on Team KD, you got Bradley Beal, you got Kyrie Irving, you got Giannis, and you got Joel Embiid. Team LeBron or Team KD, Scotty D, who you rocking with?
I'm going to stay East Coast, man.
You're going to stay on the East Coast, so you're going to stay with Team KD. They got guys like Jimmy Butler, Trae Young, Russ, Gordon Hayward, Tatum, Julius Randle, Ben Simmons. I mean, they got a nice squad over there on the East side, so we'll see. Other guys on Team LeBron, Zion, Brandon Ingram, Rudy Gobert, Melo, some guys in the West. So we'll see if it's the Team LeBron or Team KD comes out with it. Now, the thing I like about All-Star Weekend, they're doing some good things to help HBCUs. The NBA will provide more than $3 million in support of HBCUs through the Thurgood Marshall College Fund, United Negro College Fund, and the Direct Relief Fund for Health Equity. And now the goal is they're going to bring spotlight to the HBCUs, but they will display in every event on Sunday, whether that's a dunk contest, three-point contest, or the skills challenge. They're going to have ways that they can earn money and then go towards these different funds that are going to help HBCUs. So I thought that was pretty cool that the All-Star and NBA have kind of combined with HBCUs to give them some support. And it's going to be cool to look at it. Now, some of how it ranks out is during the three-point contest, the money balls were garnering a $3,500 donation. Shots from a certain area were merit a $5,000 donation. And the sponsor of Mountain Dew will award $100,000 in scholarships to two students during the event. How cool is that? Now, that's
awesome.
That's doing a lot right there for them. The three slam dunk participants were representing HBCU. So each guy will represent an HBCU, which is cool. And the winner earning an additional $100,000 to help with the Thurgood Marshall COVID-19 HBCU Emergency Fund. So shout out to NBA, man, doing some really good things there to help some HBCUs, and looking forward to the NBA All-Star game. You go on Team KD. I'm going to stay on Team LeBron. We're going to have a little East versus West and see what happens next week and see who gets the bragging rights. Let's get to our guest, man, before we go any further. Coming up next, a surprise guest here on the Triple Threat Podcast. And guess who's going to run it? Scotty D going to run this interview with our next guest. Yep. We'll holler at y'all in just a little bit here on the Triple Threat Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Triple Threat Podcast. I am Scotty D, and as DJ told you, we have a special guest today. I've been waiting a long time for this interview. I knew whenever we needed a fill-in that this guy would be the person that would be reliable and be there for us if we needed him. And so I'd just like to introduce to you Mr. Donald Eugene Shockley. Hello?
Can't believe you went to the whole government name moment. Y'all hear that, people? He done went to my whole government name, everybody.
I'm following your lead, man.
Yeah. I need a little Matrix thing in just to clear everybody's memory so they can forget about that when they move on. But, Scott, it's great to be here on the Triple Threat Podcast. I've been listening to this podcast for, you know, 30 plus episodes now. And mm-hmm. I love what you guys do on here, man. It's really cool. So I appreciate you having me here today, man.
Well, I appreciate that, DJ. It's been a fun 6 or 7 months here.
Yeah.
But listen, man, I want to, a lot of people are fans of yours, and I know some backstories on you, and I just want to, let the people know a little bit about your career.
Okay.
And why things went the way they did, and how you look back on it.
All right.
First of all, DJ is a local guy. He's from North Clayton High School. Played football for his dad. Shout out to Coach. And tell us a little bit about your high school career and you know what how things went playing for your pops.
So my mom hated it. When she knew I was going to go play for my dad, she said, I don't know how this going to work because she knew my dad was going to be hard on me. And he was. He was way harder on me because he made sure there was no favoritism. Any of my partners who played high school ball with can attest to it. There were guys who, you know, thought he was way harder on me than everybody, but it's all good. He made me a tougher player. And we had our battles, no doubt. There were times where I wanted to, you know, slammed my dad a couple of times because he made me mad. And but I had to realize he was my dad and I wasn't going to be able to do that. But it was cool, man. He taught me a lot. We went to a lot of different camps. And it was cool that he was the play caller, so I could come home and we would watch film and go over stuff that happened in the game or in practice. Mm-hmm. And we would watch film. And he taught me how to watch film at an early age as opposed to a lot of guys who get to college and didn't know how to watch film. So it was cool growing up. And by the time I left college, by the time I left high school, rated number 2 quarterback in the country. So worked out pretty good. Had a lot of good dudes around me who played ball with me. A lot of guys who did like I did, went both ways, played a bunch of different sports. So absolutely a credit to the guys I was around that helped me.
You played, you ran some track, where it was a good track athlete, and also played some baseball, and you've mentioned it on the show several times, but you actually like baseball a little bit more than football back in the day. Yeah,
baseball was my love, man. I thought I was going to play in MLB, not the NFL, because I grew up as a shortstop and pitcher, and I used to pitch all the time because I was one of our better pitchers in high school, so I would pitch all the time, mm-hmm. and my arm would hurt. When I mean hurt, I'm talking about coming to the dugout and Flexol just squirting it on that, just rubbing it in like lotion every single inning. And I was like, dude, I can't do this in college. Is my arm going to feel like this? So that's when baseball actually kind of went out the window. I actually got drafted in baseball and everything. But I was like, bro, my arm be aching. You know how you feel like you got a pulse in your head? That's how my arm used to be. So love baseball. I don't know how you say a good track athlete. I was a track guinea pig. My dad would put me in track just to make me faster. And he put me on all the fast heats. And I would get blown out, but I would get faster. So that was the end goal. So
there you go. That hey, Papa knows best, man.
Hey. At the time, I didn't think so.
So, yeah. So, like you said, you were a very highly recruited quarterback coming out of high school. And tell us a little bit about your recruitment process. Who was in the cards? Who was in the, you know, in the possibility? What hats were sitting in front of you if you did
that? So what's crazy is I got recruited by every team in the country except for your freaking Gators Steve Spurrier. So Spurrier didn't want me, man. I wasn't good enough to play for Spurrier. But years later, he became pretty cool. And I met him a bunch of times at a lot of different events. And he absolutely knew who I was after I got to college and, you know, getting up playing against him when he went to South Carolina and Florida and all that kind of stuff. So, but recruited by everybody in the country. But I had my eye on playing for Coach Rick. At the time, he was at Florida State. And he was there and he was recruiting me. I thought I was going to be a Seminole. He ends up taking a job at Georgia. Same day he's at Georgia, he's sitting in my living room and he's telling me how great Georgia is. And I said, Coach, 2 weeks ago, you said the same thing about Florida State. He said, well, you know exactly what I mean. I'm the best coach for you. So I said, man, this dude coached Winky. He coached Charlie Ward, 2 totally different style quarterbacks. The guy knows what he's talking about. So it was all uphill from there and decided to go to the University of Georgia and be a hometown guy and, you know, put that G on my helmet. So I don't regret it at all.
So you get to Georgia as a freshman. And there's a redshirt freshman there by the name of David Green.
For sure.
Now, in terms of notoriety, or as far as what most people would have thought potential, this would have been going to be DJ's show soon.
Yeah.
But then David Green ended up having a bunch of records. How was it going up there? I know you well enough to know that you weren't walking in there just expecting to be the starter and be right. Things be handed to you. Yeah. But what was that like when you know Mark Richt made David Green the starter?
Well, see, the interesting thing about it was, even though Greeny, you know, took off and all that, when we were competing for the starting job, it was 50-50. Mm-hmm. And we were actually going back and forth in practice and games, and I ended up getting hurt. And when I got hurt, mm-hmm. and I had to sit out for 4 or 5 weeks, that's when Greeny took off. And from there, he became the guy. So I don't know what would happen if I would have, you know, not gotten hurt, but that's just how it worked out. And mm-hmm. the plan wasn't for me to start at that time. And Greeny, really great friend of mine, still a great friend of mine. The dude did everything in his power to be the guy. And just like anybody else going to college, and you want to start, you want to play, you want to, you know, make mm-hmm. your family proud. And he did that. But for me, it was all about competing. It was about me being the best, you know, player I can for everybody on that team. And I, you know, every day I came in ready to work, and when my opportunity came, took full advantage of it.
Yeah, I have no doubt about that. So the question that always gets asked, and I know you've answered it 100 times, I asked you about 8 years ago when we first met. We were sitting there having dinner before a high school football game, and I said, DJ, I got to ask you, why did you stay?
Yeah.
So don't just tell me why you stay, but let people know what was out there for you were in the, you know, at least in discussion phase.
So the crazy thing about it is, it's similar how it is now. Everybody knows when a player is thinking about transferring, or a guy who everybody thinks should be playing, similar to what happened just a few years ago with Justin Fields. Like, everybody knew this dude was talented and needed to be playing somewhere. So during that time, Bobby Bowden at Florida State was calling my dad, Ralph Friesian. He was at Maryland at the time. North Carolina was the school I was looking at too. They were calling my dad. And this was stuff that I didn't know till later on. But he's like, all these coaches were calling saying, look, he can come here and start for us right now. So I had my dad pulling on me saying, hey, we need to get out of here. Like, we ain't waiting 3 years to be the guy. And mm-hmm. that's just him talking as a dad. He wasn't a coach. He was a dad. Sure. He wanted the best for me.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I knew that this had to be a decision for me. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of kids these days don't look past this year. They don't look at what can ultimately help them going down the road in the future. And for me, mm-hmm. I looked at it like I wanted to show people that I could actually be a player that was, for one, that was dependable, but also a guy who, when you looked at me, you knew you could count on this guy to be the dude. And obviously, as I got older, I kind of made it as I didn't sign a college contract. I signed it a life contract. And what I mean by that is, one, I was going to get my degree from the University of Georgia. I'm a Georgia boy. I'm a Georgia kid. Knew I would live in Georgia. So having a degree meant a lot to me. But also, I wanted people to know, hey, just because things weren't going your way don't mean you run away from it and you try something else. I wanted to prove to the Georgia fans, I wanted to prove to myself that mm-hmm. I could do it on this level at this place at the University of Georgia. And the last part of it was Coach Richt. Coach Richt was a huge part of keeping me there. I had a meeting with him. He knew I was thinking about transferring, and he didn't lie to me. He told me straight up, Shock, I'm not going to say we're going to promise you can start 3-4 games. I'm not going to promise mm-hmm. you how much time you're going to play. But he said, I know one thing is you're going to love, you're going to be loved on. Mm-hmm. You're going to get your degree. You're going to leave here with a smile on your face. And at that point, I knew this is what it was all about. I trust this guy. I know this. I was his first recruit to Georgia, so I mm-hmm. knew at that point he cared about me as a person more than as a player. And that meant more to me than anything. I can go anywhere else, and I wouldn't know how that coach felt about me. But I knew this guy at this major university loved and cared for me as a person, and that mattered the most. And after that, everything else was in the rear view. I said I wasn't going to look back on it, wasn't going to take any regrets, and ended up you know, getting a start my last year in 05, and we go win the SEC championship, and it's gratifying, satisfying all in one, and we get a chance to play in the Sugar Bowl versus West Virginia. Didn't end up winning the ball game, but was a great game. So having that opportunity to prove it to everybody in the Georgia nation was pretty cool for me, and having an opportunity to prove it to myself. And I think that's what a lot of people forget about, is sometimes you forget about why you're doing certain things or what made you who you are. And for me, I had to prove it to myself that I could still do it. Even that number two rated quarterback in the country, I had to prove to myself that I was still that dude and I could do it. And ultimately getting it done was the best satisfaction I could have as a collegiate player.
Well, I know it made you one of the most beloved Georgia football players in this state. I hear that from people all the time that it, that you're up there with Herschel, you know, and
I don't know how many people up there with Herschel, man.
No, you, as far as where you are in Georgia fans' hearts, you are for sure. There's no doubt. That's one of the reasons I wanted to work with you. Yeah, you touched on your Georgia on your senior season, and you hit a bunch of accolades then too. You were the FCA Player of the Year. You were third team. Or you're a third in the AP Player of the Year voting. Let's move on to the draft real quick. What was your expectations heading into the draft?
See, I thought I would be probably a fourth, fifth round guy, to be honest. Obviously, the biggest knock on me was he only played 1 year. This guy's got great stats, fundamentally, can throw it, can run, but he only got 1 year to prove it. And that was the biggest knock. And people wasn't sure if this was a one-year wonder, or if the teams were down, whatever it was, but that was the knock on me, and I couldn't do nothing about that. That's just, I mean, what I did the best I could. So going into the draft, though, Greg Knapp, who was the offensive coordinator at the time for the Falcons, he would come watch me all the time. He would come down to our school. I met with him a bunch of times, but I knew no way the Falcons draft me. No way. They're showing way too much attention. And fourth, fifth round goes by. I'm seeing all these quarterbacks get drafted. I'm like, I don't even know who that guy is. Where is he from? And this guy's getting drafted. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I just stayed up in my room. It was just my family around. And crazy thing is the Falcons call in the seventh round. And I send them the voicemail because it's an Atlanta number. I'm from Atlanta. So I'm like, here goes somebody else calling to see, hey, man, did you get drafted? Where you going? So I send them a voicemail. But then they called right back, and I was like, oh, I might need to ask this. Let me see what it is. And it was Jim Moore on the call, and he was like, yo, we want you to come. We're going to draft you here. And then I talked to Arthur Blank, talked to Greg Knapp, and the rest is history. Got drafted in the seventh round, coming to a franchise with the biggest player in the National Football League, and Michael Vick, which was pretty cool. He was the first guy I met when I walked into the Falcons facility. But to be able to watch that dude for a whole year and sit in the meeting rooms with him. And I'm like, dude, I'm running the same plays as Mike. I got on his cleats, you know. It's pretty cool to have that kind of relationship with him, and then Matt Schaub as well, who was the second string guy at the time.
So let's move into, I think it was your second year in 07. On March 8th, Matt Schaub gets traded to the Texans.
Yeah.
A month and a half later, April 25th, Michael Vick gets in trouble.
Yeah.
What was your thought process then? What were you thinking was on the horizon for you?
Well, I got a chance. That's what I'm saying. I got a chance. In the National Football League, both the guys in front of me are gone. No matter who they bring in here, I'm the guy who's been around here. And I took that kind of mindset into it. And as the season progressed, as the preseason started, I was starting to get more of the first team reps. And at the time we had Joey Harrington, who was a number one overall pick. Mm-hmm. We had Chris Redman, who had played a couple of years in the league, and it was me, but I was outplaying both of those dudes. And I was like, man, I got a chance to be the guy. Second preseason game, killing it. We're playing in Buffalo. I'm throwing it all over the yard. I'm running, you know, making plays. And everybody's like, Shock's going to be the guy. I got defensive coaches coming up to me saying, hey, just keep doing what you're doing. We love the way you're playing. And this is defensive coach. They don't really talk to offensive guys like that. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was pretty cool. And second preseason game, I think it might have been my last drive. We're driving. We're inside the 15-yard line, about to score again. And the Red Sea freaking parts. I'm like, oh, look at that lane. I take off, and it's me and this one guy on like the 3-yard line. I try to go shake, and my knee goes left, but my body's going right, and boom, tear my ACL. I'm out. It was tough, obviously, thinking I could be the guy. They bring in Byron Leftwich, and that year they had Joey Harrington, Chris Redman, and Byron Leftwich all play that year. Mm-hmm. So there was a great chance I would have had a chance to play in the National Football League and possibly be a chance to be a starter. Just wasn't to be. And my third year, they draft my man Matty Ice. They bring Matty Ice in and give him 70 mil. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be the backup now for real. So, you know, play another couple of years, but a great experience, great opportunity, play with some great players. And it was cool to be a part of that and say, hey, I played 5 years in the National Football League.
Yeah, that was a disappointing time for a lot of us because we were, you know, we were okay with Shelby getting traded until Mike Vick got in trouble. And then we put all our, we had all of our hope on you, man. We were pulling for you for real.
Yeah,
but I'm the worst interviewer ever, huh? Tell us real quick. Tell us real quick about your broadcast, what you've been doing broadcast wise.
So, man, it's been cool, man. I got my degree in speech communications. And at first it was all about just, I want to be able to speak in front of the camera. I was a quarterback at a major university. Let's make sure we could speak in front of the camera. Mm-hmm. And when I got to the Falcons, I was asked to host my own show off the field with a bunch of my teammates. And I had a bunch of different opportunities come from that. And then it just kind of taken off. And now it's pretty cool that I'm kind of at the pinnacle of where you want to be and still growing, you know, on ESPN now, SEC Network, get to call games. Been doing it for the last 3 years. Get to work still with the Falcons on AtlantaFalcons.com. Do some stuff locally here in Atlanta. I'm blessed to have the opportunity.
You have a highly successful podcast.
I have a highly successful podcast, the Triple Threat Podcast, that is doing great.
I call you the hardest working man in show business. This guy is so busy during football season. It's ridiculous. Tell us about what's going on with your kids and Miss Shockley.
Gotta love what you do, man. Obviously, my wife is the one that keeps this house going. My wife, Portia, she does everything for us. I got a daughter who's 10, does gymnastics. My little guy, Makai, who's 8, does everything under the sun, whatever season it is. But love my family, man, doing great things with them and just living life, trying to enjoy it and be safe, man.
DJ, thanks for letting me pop this on you. For you listeners, I didn't tell them we were going to do this until we started our Zoom call today. So I appreciate it. I know it's a well-rehearsed thing, but, you know, people like hearing your story, man. And I appreciate what we've been doing. I'm having a blast working with you. And everybody, make sure you subscribe, you listen. We're on YouTube. We're on all the podcast platforms. Like us on social media. We need to get that following going. And for DJ Shockley, this is Scotty D signing off for the Triple Threat Podcast. Deuces.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.